Welcome to Across the Mic with Julie Otaku. I'm your host, Julie Otaku. This is a podcast about blackness and its many intersections ranging from politics to fashion, music to activism, academia to art, sex work to healthcare, and so on and so forth. Guest appearances from professionals in their respective fields will provide insight and unique perspectives to the issues discussed. Sit back, listen, laugh, think, and consider new perspectives as you join me across the mic. Joining me today is Iman Olden. She is a production slash executive assistant for film and TV production. She is a Californian by the way of Los Angeles and an alumnus of California State University, Monterey Bay, where she studied cinematic arts and technology. Welcome and thank you for joining me.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. It's a pleasure. What got you into film and TV? Is this something you've always had an interest in, or you kind of grew more fond of it over time?
Well, I studied it at Cal State University, Monterey Bay. And my major was cinematic arts and technology. I have an interest in screenwriting as a focus, but it has become more of being on set and behind the scenes production-wise.
Got it. You say you like screenwriting. Is there anybody specific in the industry that you either look up to or would like to work with?
I mean, so many to name. I'm a big Regina King fan.
Rightfully so.
Right. And I really enjoy her work on Boondocks. So that's definitely something I look up to.
Got it. And what are some movies or TV shows that inspired you to actually want to pursue either screenwriting or TV production?
I wouldn't say a particular movie, but I definitely grew up really well enthused about writing and watching the process and just how it can captivate an audience. And it's kind of something that I see as universal language. Films can definitely impact people who may or may not have experienced that. But once you watch the film, you have to empathize towards it.
Got it. What are some films that have had that effect on you recently?
I got to see Get Out, of course, Queen and Slim. Queen and Slim was just interesting. It was, you have to watch it like three times.
Yeah, that's the word for it.
Yeah, you have to watch it a good like three times. What else have I watched recently? Some things that I really like TV-wise, if we're going to leave the film area, I really like Insecure.
Absolutely adore Insecure. I just binge-watched the whole thing for the first time not too long ago.
Exactly, and she's from where I'm from.
So long.
Yeah, she
really?
Shot it in my neighborhood, yes.
What?
I know.
That is so cool.
It's pretty cool. I love Big Little Lies as well. That's shot in Monterey. That's where I attended my university, and I also got to work on that set for two episodes, so that was pretty cool.
Wow. What role did you play in those episodes?
Oh no, I don't do acting at all.
I mean, like, what role did you play on the team?
Oh, PA, which would be a production assistant.
Awesome. Now, what does a role like that entail?
Honestly, you know, in the funnest, lighthearted way, it's usually like a runner girl or runner boy. And you just really get to observe and learn everything you're supposed to do, whatever they ask of you, to go and do errands, to check a script, to go and find an actor, make sure they're good, stuff like that.
Awesome. Okay. And did you find it easier to land such a job because of your proximity to Hollywood?
I wouldn't say so. I would say just because of my major and the things I did while I was studying it. So, yeah, what led me to my current spot is simply how consistent I was with where I wanted to go once I finished college. I was working at film festivals while also studying cinematic arts and technology. I was working on productions. I was just literally trying everything possible.
Got it. What are some of the risks you might have taken where in the moment you felt like you were stepping off a cliff and even like considering it, but looking back now, you're happy you did them?
I would definitely say while you're in college, you would be trying to choose between a more class-oriented class. I want to say like task. Yeah, you have to choose between that and activity or something that you would think is of the industry. So like I said, I was working at film festivals and sometimes I would have to take a day that I would typically be in class to do and go and work that. But it was kind of in hindsight, like, what am I really hoping to do when I'm done with this? So this is a risk I have to take so that I can come out the other end more knowledgeable.
Got it. And what were some of the like doubtful moments that you had? Because taking such a leap, some people cut class just to cut class,
but right.
cutting class to like actually
get physical,
the career that you wanted to.
And experience, get the experience.
Exactly.
Right. The hands-on.
You're being productive with your cutting.
Right.
Some people just cut class and they're like, all right, I'm going
right.
to start.
But I was
just going to stay in bed.
Exactly. And I was conscious of that though. So I would obviously email a professor. I wasn't completely aloof.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And in your specific career, in your field, so to speak, there's been a lot of scrutiny from the, what was it, Oscars are so white.
Yes.
And just taking Hollywood to task really on its far too long tradition of not being inclusive, whether it's on screen or behind the camera. Have you noticed any kind of change in the teams that you work on, you work with, or like?
I wouldn't necessarily say, okay. I wouldn't say an instant or a direct change has come down my line, but I would definitely see the conversation has started. I have friends that work at other studios. I have friends that work at Sony, work at Disney, work at CBS, and they are having the conversations like with Netflix and such. So people are definitely in these rooms and they're asking their peers and they're also putting value to that. So something that wasn't maybe happening for this time period of a shift was people weren't getting really compensated for these type of dialogues. Mm-hmm. And now it's kind of a consultation type of thing and people are coming in and getting paid to help with cultural enrichment within
a certain.
Exactly. So it's shifted that for some people who are in that field.
That's awesome because such conversations, people think like as a white person, they think it's uncomfortable to be having it. Imagine a black person on the giving end being the one to have this conversation with you and trying to get you to humanize them.
Right.
That is something yes. that needs to be compensated.
Right. Also, it's just in business, that would be something that, you know, that's supply and demand. You need the knowledge I have and I am coming to supply it. So as
sure.
business would go, you definitely should be compensated for any knowledge you bring to any other company in that aspect.
For sure. How else do you think Hollywood and your field of work, how else do you think it can grow? And it still has yet to grow in the context of the social uprising we're having.
I would say it has a lot of room to grow. We're literally at the bare foundation. We're doing the bare minimum. Mm-hmm. We're just getting the ball rolling. I really don't think it's going to happen so quickly. It's something that has to be internal and then we start to see it external, but it has to be rumbling from the inside for a while for it to really be seen prevalent anywhere because it's a lot of work to be done.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And in terms of the material that's been coming out, you being a participant in the production and a helping hand on the set and seeing these actors and some of these things come from ideas to then being published on Netflix and wherever else. How do you feel they've done in terms of representation?
I think on screen, which is what we all usually see pretty typically, is we see the diversity. But I think some of the bigger changes are going to be in things that I do, which would be behind the scenes, in the rooms, at the table reads, in the executive meetings, stuff like that. That is where a major shift, because those rooms don't look like me and you predominantly.
True.
As for if you get on a set and you're maybe watching the cast, they may look all like you. Take Insecure, for example. Yeah. Issa Rae has been able to have both sides of the screen look diverse.
I think that's so incredible.
Yes. So I also think that it has a long way to go where what we see on the screen is also reflective of who's writing for these people. Are we having the people who would be able to put themselves or have experience such in those writer room? Oh, do we have these people seated at the studio exec meeting tables? You know, it's not just what you see on the other side of the screen, because, you know, if you really want to know, a lot of people didn't think anything was wrong because you see so much diversity now on TV.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I think a lot of people who are in it are like, whoa, that ain't the problem. It's the behind the scenes.
Wow. That's like the most blatant show of like smoke and mirrors, really, because it's like you
right.
see this all black cast.
Right.
Oh, they're doing a great job. They're championing these stories.
Right.
But it's like, who is writing these stories?
And the writer. writer's room may have maybe 2 to 3 Black people out of maybe 10 or more. So it depends on where you're looking. That's not a blanket statement, but it definitely can happen and does happen and is, you know, typically what happens.
Mm-hmm. And how often do you find yourself being the like one of 2 or 3 on a team of 15?
Oh, often. I went to Cal State Monterey Bay, which was a very small population of people who look like me. I will say, though, the Latino ratio at my university was almost equivalent to our Caucasian. Yeah, I would say almost equivalent. But that was running neck and neck. For a Black population, we were under 10%.
Mm. So it was another PWI.
Right.
Classic. And California is known for championing diversity and all of these different things. But it's like, yeah, it's cool on paper. It's cool to talk about it, but the systems and institutions in place need to reflect it as well. You can't just use it as a slogan or a catch-all.
Right. So that's also another thing where it would be what you see behind the scenes versus in camera. You know, you go to a university website and you see all these pictures, all these students, and then behind the scenes, maybe the school barely has any professors who look like these students on said posters for advertising. Recruiters, RAs, you know, things like that are behind the scenes you may or may not see. And they're very important to students to feel comfortable just how every other student typically sees someone who looks like them all across the campus.
Yeah, a lot of this diversity and inclusivity talk tends to be very, very, very performative. And colleges are masters of PR, I would say even better than most politicians. So it's not uncommon. That happens out in California. That definitely happens out here in New York. They like to make it seem like New York and California are like almost socialist states and they're so liberal, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's because you play that up. But you look at the actual structures and it doesn't always reflect the sentiment.
Right. And everything is a trickle down effect. So nothing can be fixed overnight or started from the top. It has to start with your foundation. And recruiting for colleges is like the biggest thing to solve these issues. And not convincing or selling a false narrative to students to come to university, you know, and then hiring genuine people to genuinely, you know, recruit for your university. That is something that should happen because a lot of students of color also feel like you're just being a diversity pick. So they don't want to go. So it really depends on who's talking to them, who you're sending out to these high schools to get these students, the email. It's just everything. Everything trickles down to your foundation and how you're starting and who you're hiring.
Yeah, that's so real. And even before you get to the different like college admissions boards and who's coming down to talk to us, when you come back to the college admissions boards and the people come down to the schools, it's like, yeah, they're part of the problem. But before the student even faces them, they've also faced the guidance counselor,
right,
who said, oh, maybe you should look at a community college,
right,
maybe you should do a trade,
which don't get me wrong, I'm all for after having finished and gone through
likewise.
That the first, you know, those GEs are kind of, you know, a waste of money at a university because you could definitely knock those out while being a junior senior, which I did for at least one or two of mine. I did that, but I didn't know I could have taken like a course load and knocked those out and just jumped into my second year and saved some money and time.
So much money. Oh, my Lord.
Yes, because I've seen the people that come from the community colleges knock out their stuff quicker and finish graduation quicker than us who started a typical 4 year and then went the path we were told.
Honestly. And in your line of work, there are usually very tight-lipped practices in terms of what you're able to disclose and not disclose. At your liberty, what are some of the projects you have worked on that you can speak about?
I've worked on the Big Little Lies set, and that is actually on HBO. I have worked on 2 shows that are on Netflix. Dear White People is one of them.
Loved it.
Love it. What else? I've been in-house, so I didn't physically get to work on some of the Netflix scripted originals, but I still thoroughly enjoy them. It just depends on the projects.
Got it. And with, first off, that's an impressive catalog thus far. And it's only going to get better off over time. And then the assistant will just turn into executive producer in even more time. So absolutely all the best and wishing you nothing but fortune as you continue in this field.
Thank you.
No problem at all. How often do you run into another production assistant or executive assistant that is also a Black woman? Is it still a very male-dominated field, or is it more so like mixed?
I would say pretty often. It depends. I would say it depends. You will run into people. It depends on the studio, honestly. It depends on the project. And you'll run into those people maybe every blue moon, or sometimes you'll be on like a set and it's extremely diverse and you've literally never even seen so many people that look like you. So you even get a little shock. So it just depends on the project. As I've done independent contract things for different studios, I've learned different cultures run with different companies. So it really depends. I would say maybe 1 out of 5 times.
Without speaking specifically to which companies run with which crowds, what are some of the less savory practices you've been witness to, or maybe even like been subjected to in the industry so far?
I actually have not had, let me find some wood to knock on. I have not had
that is a blessing.
Negative, just leaving a sour taste in your mouth type experiences. I was really blessed to finish college and jump right into it because I was already pursuing it while in school. And I got pretty comfortable and pretty confident with what my capabilities are. And I knew how to maneuver myself in such a way that I was in the right place and around the right people. So that's just a blessing in itself, but that's not something everyone experiences. And I definitely realize that as people have had some awful experiences. But I haven't, you know, been to each studio. I haven't experienced each set or office. So far, it's going fine so far.
Awesome. I'm so glad to hear that. I'm so glad to hear that because it's too often that we find these horror stories, really, and people just meeting their heroes and it not being the way they thought it would.
True. Yes. Not yet met a hero yet, but...
Then go ahead and name a few of them. Who were some
no,
names
I haven't
and
met,
people you would love to meet?
I would... I haven't met anyone I'm like extremely like, you know, I haven't met, you know, Jane Fonda. So I haven't met, you know, Viola Davis yet. So when we get there, you'll hear from me.
Oh, for sure. I'll be checking in.
Yeah, definitely. But The Big Little Lies was pretty cool. Obviously, I didn't get to work the season that they had Meryl Streep. Unfortunately, I would love to at least see her from a distance. Wow. They got her second season. That's when she got picked up. But I was on set and I got to see Reese Witherspoon. I got to see Zoe Kravitz, Nicole Kidman, which is pretty cool. I got to see them in action. I got to see them not in action, minding their business and me staying out of their space. Yeah, I have learned the art of admiring from a distance because we are all human. So
absolutely.
That is
absolutely
something I practice, I preach, and I make sure I stick with it.
For sure. How does it feel to have grown up watching these people on television or on the movie screen? And now it's like, oh, she's 30 feet away from me eating a sandwich. How does that feel?
It's pretty cool. I think it's more of the anticipation that gets people hype. But when you're in a field of just like being a runner girl, or runner boy on a set, or you're being an assistant on a set, you're prepared. You know, you got your call time, you got your schedule, and you knew you were going to be on set, and you knew who was going to be on set that day. So it's more of the preparation that calms you down. I guess the reason, you know, I always say, you know, you see people in movies or you see them on Instagram and like they run into a celebrity and they have an instant reaction. That's because they weren't prepared. They had no idea they were going to see that person in that time, in that moment. So it's a completely different reaction. I haven't been in a surprise situation where I saw Reese Witherspoon across from me on a set. So again, also, they're just human. So, you
that
know,
is so true.
It's something I, you know, it's like you're a human who does an excellent job and you have a cool job and this is cool to see you do it. Yeah. I can't say I'll act like that if I see Viola Davis or Regina King.
But, yeah, I was about to ask. Like, but, you've yet to be starstruck?
I have not. Yeah, it hasn't happened yet.
But you think those three for sure would have you like nervous, palm sweaty and everything?
Reese Witherspoon is a phenomenal actress. So I would have thought I would have had a different reaction, but I was really cool and chill. Yeah, I was very chill. I wasn't, you know, Nicole Kidman too. And Zoe Kravitz is Lisa Bonet's daughter. So.
Yeah. I would have freaked out just a little bit.
They're all beautiful humans. Oh. Yeah. And they're all beautiful humans. Like just the energy is very calming and sweet and genuine. And, you know, yeah, you definitely feel the humanness when you interact with these people.
That's really nice. That's really, that makes me feel very happy about celebrities, because too often you hear, oh, this celebrity's like this on set, this celebrity's like this, and you can't bear them. Like when the stuff came out about Ellen, I'm like, yo, dog, what?
Yeah.
Like that is absolute madness. You don't even know what these people are like. But to now speak to someone who's had somewhat close contact and seen them in action amongst other people, I was about to say mere mortals. We're all mere mortals. Jesus. Look at me exalting these people who put on their pants one leg at a time, too.
See.
But like, I'm really impressed that you demystified, at least to a greater degree than most celebrities, like how we place them on these pedestals and we just exalt them. And it's like, oh my God, it's such and such. Oh my God, it's such and such. You're kind of like, I was going to say desensitizing, but I think you're more seasoned.
Yeah.
You're more experienced and you're more familiar with seeing a really big name like Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman, seeing them in person. It's like, oh, okay. Like, did a great job in that movie. You're doing a great job in this show, this movie.
Yes. Cool. Exactly. Yes. I think I've mastered, I won't jinx myself, but I so far have mastered the art of keeping my cool and remembering we are all just human. You know, that's just how I have to operate.
And you're also doing a job. You can't afford to treat
that too.
Too much. Exactly. Your boss is looking at you like, yo, dog, you can't,
exactly.
You can't handle it.
Exactly. And I'm just an assistant. And I know, like, you never want to downplay what you're doing, but I just do assistant work on sets. I don't, I'm in within close proximity and breathing air, but I'm not at the table with a seat to make decisions yet, which I feel like I'll be a lot more calm once I'm there, and I will be even more calm and collected. But so far, even just being there to bear witness, I realize we're human. That's also just how I was raised. You know, I'm from LA. I live in Inglewood. Grew up and lived in Inglewood. That's where I'm from. And, you know, I have really cool shops that are by my house that have celebrities at Simply Wholesome, that's up the hill from me. And Nipsey Hussle and Jhené Aiko run through there.
God bless. God rest his
right.
soul.
Right. He did God pretty frequently in Jhené as well. Dom Kennedy as well. Those are people you would see in there and just be like, okay, cool. All types of celebrities. It's LA. I feel like LA people should be more seasoned considering how we grew up, you know?
Yeah. I really love that about
we
LA.
We should, but sometimes because they're not, which is so surprising.
I would say not even surprising. If I was an LA person, like a native, and I saw another LA resident freak out over somebody that is a pretty frequent
right.
visitor, I'd be like, yo, you're embarrassing, bro. Like, what are you doing? Get it together.
But that's awesome.
Unless that was like, right. your idol, get it
right.
together.
But we also, you have to also realize I was gone. I left and went to college for 5 years. So I didn't realize how many, I was up 6 hours. I was in the Bay Area. So I didn't realize when I went back to LA, like just how many non-natives were there. So of course they weren't seasoned. And that's how you also figure out who is a native and who isn't, because some people are a lot more calm and collected. And then some people have just moved there to start a new job. They've never seen these type of people walking around. You know, it's very new to them. So you have to be empathetic to that.
That's very true. That's very true. Now, with your upbringing, I know you're very close with your brother. You took like several trips up and down to see each other up and down LA. Besides him coming up, how was your like base? Who keeps you grounded?
That's a good question. I was raised by my mother, my aunt, and my grandmother. My grandmother passed away when I was in eighth grade. So it was we have a very small family. Mm-hmm. I am the youngest. Me and my brother share the same mom, and then I have brothers by my father. And I think in conclusion, I would like to say there's four of us, all boys except for me. And I was raised in a Christian household. Mm-hmm. I consider myself close to God. I have strong faith, even in the darkest of times.
That we're going through right
now. Man, I try to practice what I preach, but again, that human aspect of us, we are nowhere near perfect. We're just striving to do better. So I was brought up on that. We're nowhere near perfect, and this is experience of flesh. We are here in flesh, and we are to learn and to grow and to serve and to be good to other humans, be decent at the best. And not be selfish. That is how I was brought up.
Indeed. That's a great way to be brought up, especially in a place like I live in New York. That's where I reside right now. You live in LA. Those are seen as very vain, materialistic places where selflessness isn't necessarily the thing to be or is celebrated as much. So to hear that you're from LA, grew up in Inglewood, you work in this industry, and you still keep that in the forefront of everything, and you're able to demystify and humanize celebrities. Those are all very great qualities to have.
Well, I appreciate it. And, you know, it's something you have to practice. Nobody's perfect at it, though. So. You may see on the news I slipped up and, like, ran in Viola Davis's trailer.
Yeah. It's all good. It's all good. Well, I would like to give you the space to plug anything and everything that you're at liberty to speak about or have going on personally, and how people can find either your work or things you worked on. Now is your space.
Oh, that's a cool thing. Okay. Well, I am working on a script. I'm working on sets. This is COVID. Hopefully next year, that's my plan. I'll be pitching my script to some producers to get that awesome. Running. Yeah, that's what will be happening next year. I've written it down, so it will happen. Anything other than that, I am working virtually as an assistant, which I do scheduling and coordinating and tracking and logging submissions. And I track the stages of various projects within a department. I do script coverage. I just provide positive support and guidance for executives for movies or TV. Sometimes it's Netflix, sometimes it's a studio, who knows. So that's what I do.
Awesome. And I'm surprised I even forgot to ask that. How has COVID affected, like, your workflow and the nature of your job?
Big difference. Everything's virtual, so the way I'm speaking to you is typically how I speak to everyone these days, virtually. Yeah,
I couldn't even take a trip out to LA if I wanted to, right?
I mean, we're just rising so much in cases, and it's best to usually just keep your family safe. Now, if you're, like, young and you live with some roommates, cool. Yeah, you're able to maneuver around a little bit more freely, get a test here and there, make sure you're not, you know, super spreading stuff to people who are more vulnerable, but just being safe and considerate of other humans, wearing a mask, washing your hands like a decently clean human. That should have been a thing before COVID, but we're going to put this is on it now. Yeah, that's the pandemic lifestyle.
Yeah, and to add to that, caring about others and asking for people to wash their hands, socially distance, and wear masks isn't political. It's decency. Human decency. It's hygiene.
Yep. We're also in a pandemic, so it's just being conscious. I don't know. It's common sense, actually. It's just common sense.
Yeah, this is our normal. There's no return to normal. This is our new normal. We're just going to have to work with this until the virus subsides. And even after then, some of the practices we have today, whether it's in the workplace or however it manifests, it will still be changed.
I mean, look
forever.
At any industry right now. People have learned how to be proficient and productive at working remotely. Will people all be going back in office just because we have a vaccine coming out next year? Likely no. From what I hear, Twitter has sent people home indefinitely. They can work remote if they choose, or they can go back in office.
Yeah, they did.
Google is also doing similar. That's just, you know, that's going to be the new normal. And it should be. I think the flexibility helps a lot of working parents, working students, working professionals of whatever. If you have Wi-Fi and a laptop and the space and time and commitment, you should be able to work remotely and not have to commute, especially here in California where we have awful, awful traffic. I was commuting to an office in Santa Monica, which was about 8 miles from my house for 6 months last year. And that was taking me an hour.
How long is a California? Hold up. California, 8 miles is...
That was an hour every morning before 9 a.m. Yes.
With all due respect, that's disgusting. Something 8 miles away from me.
Let me tell you, and then you have to commute home.
15, yes. Maybe 20
yes.
minutes.
Yes, that is normal. That's why I come up here in the Bay. Currently, I'm up in the Bay, and me and LA, we are at odds. My mom and aunt are there, so that is the only reason I go back. But the Bay has my heart because I can flow freely, get places timely. LA.
I didn't even realize.
And the Bay Area has traffic. Like, Bay Area people, like, they'll tell me, oh, well, you know, don't leave at 3, you'll hit traffic. It's like, okay, but, like, y'all are traveling. Like, I lived at the cusp of Ladera Heights in Inglewood, and that's where my mom is from. That's where I grew up. And Culver City is my neighbor. And Santa Monica is also pretty much my neighbor right down the water. 8 miles is nothing. I could have taken the street or freeway. Either way, I was royally sitting in an hour of traffic. So let me start about, like, on a good day, getting there was 45 minutes, but coming home was never under an hour. Anything after 4 p.m., I used to sit and wait at a Starbucks because, of course, I hadn't been in LA in so long when I first went back home post-college. I hadn't been there in a while, and I was working on a set. I had an assignment, and I had a call time, and I was like, cool. I'm just going to wait it out. I'm going to wait the traffic out. No, it didn't work.
You might as well just call a friend and sleep over.
Wow.
Why you
and
thought that would work?
And it's so, everyone's so used to it. It's so normal. I'm like, no, this is not how I want to live. Spending 2 hours of my day, maybe more actually, sitting still in traffic, not moving at all.
Yeah, that sounds like torture. I didn't even understand the, like, infrastructure privilege.
That's a good word for it. You guys definitely have infrastructure privilege. That's a good way of thinking. You guys do have... See, in New York, it's not that bad. You guys have, well, yeah, it's not traffic, but...
That's true. The only time it gets really busy is when you're trying to make your way into the city from Long Island. You'll probably spend longer getting into the city than you will crossing half of Long Island. Yeah. It can be bad.
Yeah.
But that doesn't hold a candle to LA traffic. So I'm going to just enjoy my little New York traffic.
Yeah.
It's nothing.
Yeah. LA makes me want to just leave and go to New York. That's what it makes me want
to
do.
The funny thing is some
New York
people
to go to
are
LA.
Leaving
oh, trust
New
me,
York
I know.
And going to LA.
Yeah.
So. And then you've got some that are going to Atlanta. So it's like, everybody's just trying to leave.
Everyone's still
like
coming to LA. Stop coming to LA. If actually, you know what? I welcome you humans. Just don't come with a car. Okay. That's the problem. We have enough vehicles on a road to fill up the ocean. Like, please stop coming with these gas guzzling, polluting vehicles. Oh, carpool.
Oh, man. True.
Nobody ever
very
wants
valid,
a car.
Very valid
Jeez.
Way to get around. Iman, thank you so much for joining me today for this podcast. I deeply, deeply appreciate you taking time out of your day to speak to me about your job, what the field is even looking like for anybody who's considering going over to LA to get involved in film, TV production, and sharing your journey with me.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. And I wish you the absolute best. Now I feel like I have to, whenever I watch Netflix shows, I have to, like, read the credits in case
yes,
I pick up
any
the name
show,
somewhere.
Actually. Just, you know, keep the eye out.
Oh, that's
you know?
So tight.
Keep
now
the
I
eye
actually
out.
Have, that's awesome. Oh, I absolutely love that. And then I'm going to just take a picture
right,
and send
exactly.
it to you when I do.
That's, you know, until it hits the billboard. Gotcha. Then you start gotcha. Sending the billboard pictures. That's what happens.
Exactly. And then eventually your name is going to be a
true.
Household one.
That is true.
Fingers crossed, knocked on,
exactly.
knock on wood. I appreciate you so much, Iman. You have a great rest of your
Thank
day.
Thank you so
God
much.
Speed.
Thank you for tuning in today. Your listenership and support are greatly appreciated. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to use the voice message feature on the Anchor app or message me on social media. You could be listening to anything in the world right now, but you're here listening to me, and I appreciate you. Until next time, this has been Across the Mic with Julio Taku. Godspeed.